For marketing agencies and social media managers looking to prove the value of their work, I've got something special for you. Agora Pulse is not only Social Media Examiner's tool of choice as an all-in-one social media management tool, it also allows you to track the traffic, conversion, and revenue from every social post, comment, and private message. Learn how to prove your social media ROI with a free training or a free trial by visiting agorapulse.com/SME today. Again, agorapulse.com/SME.
Welcome to the Social Media Marketing Podcast, helping you navigate the social media jungle. And now, here is your host, Michael Stelzner.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you so much for joining me for the Social Media Marketing Podcast, brought to you by Social Media Examiner. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner, and this is the podcast for marketers and business owners who want to know how to navigate the ever-changing marketing jungle. Today, I've got a really exciting show for you. I'm going to be joined by Tiago Forte, and we're going to explore how to better manage ideas. If you have a million different ideas that are flooding into your brain from every different direction, and you have all the best intentions in the world to actually take those ideas and act on them and to process them, but you seem to, for whatever reason, get stuck today, trust me, you're going to love today's episode. By the way, I'm at Stelzner on Facebook and at Mike_Stelzner on Twitter/X. And also, if you're new to this podcast, be sure to follow this show so you don't miss any of our future content. Let's transition over to this week's interview with Tiago Forte.
Helping you to simplify your social safari. Here is this week's expert guide.
Today, I'm very excited to be joined by Tiago Forte. If you don't know who Tiago is, his company is called Forte Labs, and it helps people be more productive in the digital world. He's also the author of Building a Second Brain, a proven method to organize your digital life and unlock your creative potential. His podcast is Building a Second Brain Podcast, and his course is also called Building a Second Brain. Tiago, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Michael. I'm just super happy to be here.
I'm excited that you're here because we're exploring something we really don't talk about on the show very much, which is how to create systems to help you better manage your ideas. And marketers and creators and entrepreneurs are full of ideas that get lost. And I'm super excited to kind of explore this with you today. But before we go there, I want to hear your story. How did you get into what we're going to call idea management? Start wherever you want to start with your story.
Yeah, I got into it kind of against my will.
Really?
Or at least not intentionally. It really all started with a mysterious, unexplained medical condition. Back now, more than a decade ago, like 15 years ago. I was a college student in San Diego, living my life, studying, partying, typical things. And just one day out of the blue when I was working, I had a part-time job at the Apple store in San Diego. And I started feeling just this like kind of little tickle in the back of my throat, like almost like a cold was coming on. And it wasn't a cold. And then over the days, weeks, months, and eventually years, it slowly got worse and worse and worse to the point eventually it reached, which is I couldn't speak. I had trouble singing, laughing, like anything to do with kind of voice function or throat function was severely hampered, which, as you can imagine, was so challenging and really made it difficult to live, you know, my daily life.
Well, keep going, man. What happened? What was going on? I'm curious. What was the cause of this?
Yeah. So over the months and then years, I saw so many different doctors, like any chronic condition, you know, you investigate, you do tests and scans and MRIs and labs and all these things. And after seeing probably almost a dozen doctors over a period of a few years, I just kind of reached a low point or a breaking point where I realized, oh, this isn't like a simple illness that a doctor is just going to do a test and say, this is what you have, take this medication or, you know, do this procedure. It was a chronic condition and it was a functional condition is what I eventually learned. And what I had to do was kind of take responsibility for it, right? Instead of just kind of passively waiting for a doctor to like rescue me or save me. I actually went up to I had this realization one day sitting in the waiting room of a doctor's office that only I could fix this. And so I stood up right that minute, went to the receptionist, asked for my complete patient record, which at the time was like, by that time was a huge stack of papers. And she kind of looked at me like, that's weird. People don't normally do that. But she made the photocopies, gave it to me. I took it home and I realized, okay, I can't make sense of this on paper. This is an absurd amount of paper. And so I started digitizing it. I just started scanning it, you know, on those old school one page at a time scanners that we used to have. And that was this inflection point for me. Making this overwhelming amount of information digital was this turning point, because suddenly I had all these superpowers. I could scan it, I could search it, do a single search and find every single time a word or a term was mentioned. I could tag it, I could annotate it, I could add my own notes, I could cross-reference things, interconnect them. And what I discovered through doing those things was something that no doctor ever, you know, identified for me, which is that there was a small set of changes that I could make, like lifestyle changes, simple things, how I slept, what I ate, my self-care, my exercise, things like meditation, that by making these relatively small changes, I could basically resolve my symptoms.
And that's what you did.
And that's what I did. It's like these simple digital note-taking methods gave me the breakthrough that I was looking for when many thousands of dollars and the world's best doctors could not. That dichotomy was a light bulb moment for me.
So how did that ultimately lead to you deciding to go ahead and write a book and kind of create a movement almost out of this thing?
So even after that, it was such a long journey. You know, I just thought, oh, this is just some random thing that happened to me. But then over the ensuing, I think it was a decade from that first experience to when I first thought of this as a business or as a career, I started using kind of the same approach and the same tools everywhere. First, I used them for my studies. And I went from a pretty mediocre, barely getting by college student to graduating with honors with almost straight A's. And then I thought, huh, interesting. I then used it to apply for the Peace Corps, which is, for anyone who doesn't know, a U.S. government program that sends volunteers abroad to teach English, which is what I was doing, or do other kinds of service. And I basically applied to the Peace Corps, was successful, and went and served abroad, all using, like, the way I managed that was using the same tools and the same approach. And I thought, huh. Then I came back to the U.S. and I used that same approach and those same tools to get my first professional job, which was in consulting. And then I used it to start a blog and start creating content and then to start a business. And after, throughout all these stages, I'm still thinking of it as just this idiosyncratic, weird thing that I do, until eventually a few years after, like into starting my business, I thought, well, of all the techniques that I know of, what is the most powerful? It's actually this approach to digital note-taking, which by that time I had started calling my second brain. And so I made that the central focus of the business. And that was when things really kind of took off.
When did you write the book?
Starting 2019 to about 2021. And then it came out in 2022.
And tell us a little bit about the book and kind of bring us up to the present as far as like what you're doing now.
Yeah. So in 2019, I started writing this thing really just based on my own experience. Also based on a course that I'd been teaching for a few years at that point, where I taught other people how to do this for themselves. And then a lot of writing that I had done. I have a blog where I kind of open source and share all my ideas. And I just tried to put everything I knew into this book. Didn't hold anything back. There was no secret insider version, no advanced level. I was like, let me just download my brain into this thing, or really my second brain into this thing. And I did. And I, like, to be honest, even as I was writing this book, I still thought it would be this super niche thing for maybe a few hundred or a few thousand uber nerds like me. And what I've continuously discovered since then, it's now been a couple of years, is that it's not a tiny, narrow niche. It is actually kind of a universal part of, I would say, business and just life these days, which is this just overwhelming, crushing amount of information that we all have to not just like consume, but actually make sense of and understand and then use as knowledge workers.
So you obviously did well with the book. I don't know how many copies you sold, but I'm sure it was way more than you thought. You went on to start a podcast, or did the podcast come before the book and then ultimately the course? Is that kind of the order of things?
The course came first. Then I think the first season of the podcast came before the book. And then I think the second season came after. So all these things are sort of happening around the same time, but all feeding off each other.
So what exactly does Forte Labs do today? What do you do for people?
Yeah, so we're really an education company. Education is the central focus of what we do. Now, the form that education takes depends on a lot of things. We like to be super multimedia, multi-channel, podcast, YouTube, courses, books, as we've talked about. We also like to have some that are self-paced, some courses. We also do live programs. We have a membership community, a membership-based community. One big part of my journey has been really coming to understand how differently our first brains work, right? Our biological minds, this is the whole neurodiversity kind of movement. People's brains work utterly differently. So if you have a message or you have content that you want to convey and train people on, you really need to translate it across multiple formats.
Well, this topic for me is so fascinating because, well, actually, I'll let you answer, first of all, why managing ideas is so important, and then I'll explain why it's so fascinating from my perspective. But, you know, for those that are listening right now, they might feel like they've got a decent way of managing their ideas, but maybe instinctively they know there's incredible room for improvement. So what do you want to say to those that are maybe skeptical about why having some sort of a system, if you will, for managing your ideas is so important?
Yeah, this is something I'm really passionate about. You know, we're not taught to do this. No one in school ever even so much as mentioned this possibility. We have no models. We have no role models, right? But I think, this is how I think of it, is we are all now knowledge workers, practically everyone, right? Even jobs you really wouldn't think of. Managers of restaurants I've talked to, they have an incredible amount of information. Construction workers, you wouldn't believe how much, you know, a subcontractor has to manage in terms of the details of his different projects. I've spoken to truck drivers that are feeling information overload because of, you know, the routes they have to manage and all the different things. And so if you think about, okay, as a knowledge worker, what am I doing? All we're doing pretty much all day is intaking information and then doing something with it, manipulating it, transforming it, converting it from one form to another, and then outputting it. That's it. Inputs and outputs. You can boil down almost any modern job just to that simple equation. So then the question is, what is the place that those inputs are coming into and coming out of? If it's your first brain, which is my name for your
biological brain, yeah,
biological brain in between the four walls of your skull, you can do that in the short term, right? It'll work for a while, but just wait. Just wait until you have a medical condition like me where you can't rely on your brain anymore. Wait until you have kids, which is another thing that I have, which completely throws your brain for a loop.
Oh yeah.
Wait until you get older. Wait until you just want to work less and not be thinking about work 24/7. Then that breaks down and you really need a second place, an external place, which I call your second brain, which to me, you know, you can use various kinds of systems, but to me, software is the most incredible system that we have access to today. And that's all it is. It's simply a place, a trusted place outside of your brain where you're not just your ideas, but your insights, your stories, your examples, your research, your reading, little tidbits from podcasts and conversations and YouTube videos, basically any information you ever want to see again can be stored without you having to remember it.
What I love about what we're talking about here is for those of us that are in the marketing world or creators like podcasters and bloggers or even obviously marketers who are managing a lot of different tasks, we're often focused very much on what's in front of us. And we often forget what happened behind us. And that results in a lot of loss, right? Like I forgot the lessons from what happened in the past, what worked and what didn't, because I don't have an easy way to recall them. And we also often don't have a great way for us to deposit our ideas when they come to us. So a lot of times you might be in learning mode about one particular thing. Maybe it's about video creation and maybe you're getting all these different inputs coming from YouTube and podcasts and email newsletters and you just don't have a good way for you to remember it all. So you just kind of like come up with these kind of, for lack of better words, duct tape and cardboard and paper systems that just tend to fall apart the second it rains.
Exactly.
And when I say rain, I mean, it could be almost anything, right? It could be anything, like you go on vacation and you disrupt your systems. You move, you disrupt your systems. You go to a conference, you disrupt your systems. I mean, like, this is why I think what we're talking about here is absolutely so important. Would you agree?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. There's so many ways for life to throw you a curveball.
Right.
Life is so inherently unpredictable. If you are counting on life being orderly and regular and predictable and certain, you are in for a world of hurts.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in every meeting, like, fortunately, I had a meeting that canceled for me today so I could actually think. But we can't always be reliant on having meetings canceled so we can think, which is why I'm super excited to really unravel your framework. So Tiago is going to introduce a framework, which he calls CODE. We're not going to say what each of the letters stand for right out of the gate. But what I would like you to do, Tiago, is mention what happens when we follow this framework. What is the benefit? What is the outcome? What is the end state that happens when we follow this process? And then we'll break down the steps.
Yeah, that's such a great question. Oh, the end state. The best way I can describe it is just a completely different state of mind from what you typically see in the workplace. It looks like having your mind clear, having it actually in a weird way feel kind of empty, like your schedule for today when your meeting was canceled. Like, wow, I could just dwell here. I can just wander. I can explore rather than every nook and cranny of your brain crammed with stuff.
What happens when you're calm and you're focused? I just want to dig a little bit deeper. What does that make possible when all of a sudden you can explore?
Yeah, yeah. This is good. It makes possible so much, right? Everything from creativity requires a little bit of free form exploration. It just does. So that's having that kind of empty mind space makes you more creative, makes you more productive, right? Instead of trying to check off your to-dos, you know, in 5 minutes here and 15 minutes there between meetings, you can actually build up some momentum and actually do some like good batch processing. It opens up presence, the ability to just be with someone in conversation, or to be in a meeting and to actually be listening, or with your family at the end of the workday when you come home to actually, I love the feeling of closing my computer at the end of the workday and knowing that all my work in process for all the projects that I'm involved in are stored there externally, which allows my first brain to just unplug and turn off and just be with my kids and be with my family. Those are just a few things, but kind of everything, like everything starts with a free space from which to create from.
There are some people who are so locked into this conversation right now and are saying, Tiago, I want some of this. So what's the first thing we have to think about? The first step, if you will, in your process?
So let's just, yeah, take one step at a time. The first step in my process, which is kind of the backbone of my book, is capture. So the letter C for capture. And it's kind of what we were just saying. How do you get everything off your mind? You unload it from your mind. There's no other way, right? Meditation is not going to help by itself. There is information in your brain that you need to remember. And so your brain like kind of won't let go of it. It'll keep hanging onto it until it knows it's in a trusted place. So the first step of capturing, what that refers to is just capturing it digitally. Write it down with typing, save voice memos, do clips of websites, save excerpts or quotes from reading you're doing. You can save snippets of podcasts, segments of YouTube videos, whatever content it is that you're creating or kind of information that you're trying to keep in mind, no matter what it is, I can really guarantee you there is some way of capturing it. And until you do that, like that's the first step. That is what the kind of the gateway that opens up everything else that comes next.
Well, and when we were prepping for this, you said, base what you capture on your intuition. Talk to me a little bit about that, because some people have no idea what they should capture. They're receiving a lot and they feel like they need to capture it all.
Yeah. So it's funny. Once people discover this, they realize, oh, I can capture my thoughts and ideas digitally. Sometimes they go a little overboard. Essentially, they try to capture everything, right? They think, let me just capture every single thing. And it's a valuable thing to try. You can learn that lesson for yourself if you want. But I can tell you where it's going to lead, which is you're going to realize that that actually doesn't solve anything. That just moves the problem from here to your computer. And what most people eventually end up learning is you have to be selective. One study I cited in my book indicates that we actually encounter or consume 30 gigabytes of information per day.
That seems small to me if you think about the video capture just of our eyes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if you watch a lot of video, it might be more.
So what do we capture? How do we know what to document?
Yeah, so I always advise people to think about the 1%. Not 100%, not even 50%, but what is the 1% most interesting, most novel, most resonant, most original, most impactful? Like 1% of a podcast episode you're listening to, just which might just be a few lines, a few quotes. That's ideal, right?
Is it because it's going to prompt your brain to remember the rest of it? Is that kind of the idea?
Yes. Yeah, so there's a couple reasons. One is that is all you have to really do is in the future, when you're looking for ideas or inspiration, you just need to be able to remind yourself that that source even exists. If you remember it exists, you can always go back and revisit the original source, right? So it's almost like a little bookmark, right? It's like a little bookmark sticking up from the pages that says, hey, there's some good content here on X topic. If you'd like to know more, here's a link. And I really recommend people keep the links back to the original source.
Do you have any tools that you advocate for to help with this capture side of things?
There's a few. If you listen to a lot of podcasts like this one, Snipped, S-N-I-P-D, is an AI powered. It's not just a podcast listening app. It's a podcast note-taking app that I use. There's one called Readwise. Readwise is a reading app where you can save like a reading list of content you want to read. And then if you make highlights, it will save those highlights over to your note-taking app automatically. Really cool. Let's see. Readwise also has a reading app called Reader, which is, like I said, just basically a reading list.
Is it spelled like it sounds or has it got a weird spell?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just Reader.
And do you recommend just documenting these things inside of like Google Docs and or Word or just something as simple as that?
Not quite that simple. So this was part of my journey is my second brain has lived on several different platforms over the years. First, it was paper. That clearly didn't work. So I went to Microsoft Word. You know, I was a college student, so that's the only software that I knew. That doesn't work for all sorts of reasons, which we can talk about if you want. But I went from Word to Google Docs, which was an improvement, but that still didn't work. The real turning point for me was discovering digital note-taking apps. This is like a specific category of apps, right? So Word and Google Docs are word processors. Word processing is great if you're trying to like write a blog post or an essay or an article, but it really doesn't work for second brain stuff. I would really look at notes apps, which can be as simple as Apple Notes or Google Keep. It can be something like Microsoft OneNote. It can be Notion, Evernote, Obsidian, Simple Note. There's dozens of different options, but I would really recommend that specific category.
Got it. So it's a category called digital note-taking apps. And if you search for that, you're going to find a bazillion different apps. Very fascinating. AI has been a massive disruptive force over the past year. That's why we're excited to announce our brand new show, introducing AI Explored. It's a weekly show hosted by me, Michael Stelzner. If you want to understand how to put AI to work, this is the show for you. Each week, we'll dive deep into using AI to your advantage. We're talking the practical, tactical stuff that I know you're probably craving. Search for AI Explored on your favorite podcast app, and happy listening. Okay, so we've covered the C in CODE, which is the first step, which is capturing the 1%, the important novel stuff from your brain into some sort of a system so that you can come back to it later. This is the foundation, it sounds like, but there's more to it. So what is the next step?
Yeah, so once you've been capturing for a while, you'll feel a sense of relief. Okay, I'm not trying to hold this in mind, but then very soon afterwards, you run into a new problem, which is I'm saving now tons of stuff. What do I do with it? What's the next step? For most people, it's an impulse to organize it or to structure it or to create categories. And that's the O, that's the second letter. And I have a very specific framework for this called PARA. Okay, PARA is another four-letter framework, which we can talk about, but it's really kind of, I would say, the single most viral idea for my entire book. It's the single most popular, kind of well-known framework. And it's really a universal solution to organizing not just your note-taking app, but your entire digital life.
Yeah, let's unravel. What are the elements of this?
Totally. So the P stands for projects.
Okay.
And this is where I recommend people start. it's tempting to want to create these. This is the most common kind of mistake that I see, is to start creating these huge categories. People will go in and create folders or tags like business or marketing or psychology. Those are ginormous categories, right? Way too broad to be useful.
Like book, podcast, in your situation, would that be more specific?
No, that's another one, is like books. All my things I learned from books, or everything that
I meant your book, like the book you were writing. Could that be an example of it? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yes, yes. If you're writing a book, that is most certainly a project, for sure.
Yes. Okay, got it.
But what I recommend people do, if you step back for a second and think about what are you trying to accomplish with all this, it's really to be more productive, to be more prolific, to be more impactful with the things that you build and the things that you create. That's another way of saying your projects. Your projects are the literal concrete things that you are trying to build, launch, develop, sell, execute, ship, right? And so that's the main way that I recommend people organize their second brain, is according to their projects. This one idea alone is completely life-changing for so many people, organized by project.
So give me an example of a typical kind of way you might organize some of your ideas.
So let me give you a super specific example. Let's say you're listening to a podcast. Let's say you're listening to your podcast.
Yes.
Right? Since you are here listening and you get a great marketing idea. Okay. You think, oh, there's a way of, I don't know, let's say using the specific kind of content on LinkedIn to capture leads for my business, right? Super specific, super actionable. What I will see 99% of the time, someone, let's say they take note of that idea, they write it down, and then they go to decide where it goes. They'll put it in a big category called marketing. Don't do that. Instead, take just like one extra second and say, what is a specific project that I'm working on now or will be soon where this one tip, this specific tactic could be useful, and place it there instead. What that means is when you go to actually work on that project, you know, at 8:30 a.m. Monday morning, there's like a specific time you're sitting down to work on that project. What's the first thing you're going to do? You're obviously going to open up the folder or the tag related to that project. And what are you going to see is every tip, tactic, idea, insight that you've collected that is already kind of pre-qualified to be relevant to that project.
So in this particular case, it might be diversify to LinkedIn, diversify our content to LinkedIn. Maybe that's the project, right? Because we're producing content on the other platforms. And then in there are the ideas that you heard specifically on this podcast about content creation on LinkedIn. Is that kind of the example?
Exactly.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And notice that this differs person by person. This is why second brains are not transferable,
right?
I might get the same tip about LinkedIn to, I don't know, increase our SaaS sales by 25% this quarter. That might be my project. Or it might be, oh, share my artwork on LinkedIn just to promote my art. That's a different project. So depending on you, your context, your goals, your values, your principles, your season of life, you might relate that given idea to completely different projects.
Love it. Okay, what's the A and the R and the A? I'm curious.
These are presented in a specific order, which is from most important to least important. And that's always important when you organize, right? Because it's so easy in organizing to waste unbelievable amounts of time meticulously organizing something that doesn't actually matter. So people tend to spread their efforts evenly over all their information, when in fact, a small percentage of your information matters more. So projects are most important. Just want to be clear about that. The A is for areas of responsibility, which is also important. So this is, think of it like the roles that you play or the hats that you wear in life and in your work. Right? It's not exactly a project. Like, let's say you're head of marketing, you probably have different areas of responsibility, such as, I don't know, conversions, sales, inbound, outbound, like these different kind of broken out responsibilities under the umbrella of marketing.
So this is another layer of data that you're categorizing. Is that what I'm hearing you say? So it sounds like where we're going with this is each of these things can cross, like this one idea could be labeled under a project and under an area of responsibility. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Yes, potentially.
Okay.
Potentially.
That's one. Or it could just be labeled under an area of responsibility.
Yes, you can make links. By the way, that's one of the huge advantages of these note-taking apps. Right? Like if you have a sentence in Microsoft Word, as far as I know, there's no way to link that sentence to a completely different sentence somewhere else, right?
Right.
But with note-taking apps, you absolutely can. In fact, in your note-taking app, you're going to have almost like a network. It actually starts to resemble the human brain, right? Connections completely cross categories. There's no silos. Things are very cross-functional. So yeah, you can add a link, but what I tend to advise people, like in my coaching, is to choose. In theory, yes, this idea that you just found could be related to a project or multiple projects or an area or even the other letters we haven't even gotten to. But what I would really ask you to take a second and just ask, where will it be useful the soonest? Or where is it the most relevant? Because that little moment of decision will have you put it somewhere that is just most likely to be relevant.
Cool. So what's the R that follows the A?
Yes. So R is the third most important category, and it's basically everything else. It's basically miscellaneous.
Really? How did you get miscellaneous with an R?
So yeah, let me tell you. So often I notice people will save notes based on kind of what is interesting. And that's not a great criteria because it's kind of not strong enough of a filter, right? Because you're probably a curious person. You're probably someone who loves to learn. You probably have millions of things you find interesting. And so the reason I like the word resources is it kind of gets your mind to think of information in terms of its utility.
Got it.
What is the practical utility of this information? Is it a resource? Can I legitimately say this is a practical resource, not just something I found interesting? So everything from topics you're learning about, classes you're taking, curiosities that you're exploring, passions you have, interests you have, all that stuff that is not as important as your projects and areas, let's be clear, not as immediately actionable, but that is still kind of worth keeping.
I love this. So projects is the P, A is areas of responsibility, R is resources, which is kind of everything else. Now I'm curious about what the A, the final A is.
Yeah, so the A is, I would say, the least important category, but in some ways also pivotal, which is the archives.
Ah, okay.
So think about it this way. As you capture information over a long period of time, your second brain isn't just for 1 month or one quarter. This is like years that you're developing this. Information goes out of date, something that people often don't fully realize. Information has a shelf life. It becomes irrelevant. Your detailed notes on a meeting with a client that you had 5 years ago, I'm sorry, is probably never going to be relevant in the future. Now, in the digital world, that doesn't mean you delete it. Right? With digital, we can keep essentially everything. We never have to delete anything. But it's crucial that that most likely irrelevant information is kind of in cold storage. It's out of sight, out of mind. It's not somewhere basically that's going to distract you and interfere with your day-to-day work. I think of the archives as like the deep freezer in the garage where you put, say, a side of meat that you only want to see in like 6 months. You stick it in there. So you know it's safe, but you don't have to come across it every day in your fridge.
You know, I have a visual in my head of a funnel with a P-A-R-A and three different levels. And at the top is projects, which is 50% of the funnel. And then underneath it is a thinner slice that says areas of responsibility, which is separate from projects. And then underneath that is a tinier sliver called resources, which obviously points to all sorts of other funnels. And then at the bottom is this relatively large area, right? Which is archives. And it's kind of like rooms in a house, right? Like, so I think of archives as the basement. If you live in an area where you have a basement or the storage closet or the garage, right? Where you put old boxes of stuff that you don't know what to do with. Is that kind of how it works? I mean, it sounds
exactly.
Like, yeah.
Exactly. So what you just described is a triangle. It's a pyramid.
There you go. Yeah.
Which is actually a core idea from like information architecture, information science. It's actually integral to the way our mind works. We have a visual hierarchy that we use, right? There's always relatively few things. That's the top of the pyramid that you can pay attention to. Just a few. But then there's a base of the pyramid, which is a lot of other things that you kind of want underground, in the background, at the periphery that you don't want to have to pay too much attention to. Absolutely.
So what should the top of the triangle be? Should it be the projects or is that typically the smaller area?
To me, it should be projects. Yeah. And what I typically see is that projects is the smallest because that's really just your currently active projects right now. As soon as a project is finished or goes dormant, it moves to the archives.
Right. So the archives is the really big section down below.
It's usually probably, I would guess, 50 to 60% of all the information in my second brain is in the archives.
Wow. Okay, so backing up the train a little bit, the very first step in your process called code, just in case anybody's getting lost, is capture. And this is where we document what is in our brain and we get it captured into some sort of a note-taking app. Then the O is where we organize it, right? And within the O is this para sub framework that we've been talking about, right? Projects, areas of responsibility, resources, and archives. Bringing it back to code, we're now moving to the D, which is the third step in your process. So what is that D?
Yes. So D stands for distill. Distill. And this is always the step I say is the least known, is the least understood, and therefore is usually the missing piece in most people's information systems. So we've captured, we've organized, but now it's time to actually take action, right?
Right.
You've done all the preparatory work, which was not easy. You captured and documented, you organized. It's like now you're like a sprinter at the starting line. You are ready to kind of spring forward with your very best ideas. Here's the problem. It's too much. Even if you've been very selective, even if you've just saved the 1%, like I advise, it's still too much.
Too much what? Too much to do anything with it? Is that what you mean? Like it's overwhelming?
Yeah. Even say one folder for one project, if you open it up, it will be too much. If you think about the bandwidth of your brain, it's actually so limited. Think about a phone number. It's actually hard for the human brain to remember a, what, 10-digit phone number?
Unless it's a song.
Right.
Like 8675309, right? And that's not even,
yes.
That doesn't even have an area code.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of like our attention is like a little narrow gap in a door that we can see. I mean, even a single note. Often I'll read a book and come away with 2,000 or 3,000 words worth of excerpts that I've saved from that book. That's way too much to hold in mind, right? And so what you want to do is go through and distill, which more concretely is really just highlighting. It's kind of almost common sense. You have to go through a given note and just highlight the key points. It could be the key points, key takeaways, key lessons, or the most interesting points, the most unique points. It's almost like even within a single note, you have to summarize it just so it's small enough that you can actually just work with it and move it around.
Well, this is interesting because a lot of people will write down their notes somehow, some way, but they won't highlight it or they won't summarize kind of the salient points. So do you recommend doing this after you've already documented this or in the process in line as you're documenting your ideas?
You can do it both ways. Sometimes in the capture stage, when you're first writing down a note, you already know what the main points are. It's kind of like immediately apparent, in which case go for it. Like right there in the moment, just bold or highlight or underline, or it depends on which software you use, because some software doesn't have a highlighting feature or doesn't have rich text. So you have to kind of choose which method. But in other cases, it's not clear, right? Like if you're reading a book and you come away with 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 words worth of notes, you might have to actually take some time to go through and almost process it, like thoughtfully compare the different ideas to decide what the main points are. And that's why we have the second stage. So it's almost like a plan B. If you didn't identify the takeaways back in the beginning, you know the distill stage is coming up and you'll have a second chance to do that.
So do you recommend if we're categorizing these ideas and we're doing them, we're organizing the ideas is probably the best way of saying this in the other second step. And we stuck it into a project, for example, do you recommend regular intervals of going through there and highlighting or distilling, if you will, the best pieces of it so that it's essentially consumable when your brain comes back to it?
No, I don't.
How do we go about doing this then? I guess that's what I'm asking. How do we remember to distill?
This is one of the just most common kind of pitfalls that I see as well. And it's totally understandable. But here's kind of the distinction. Distilling takes effort. It really takes cognitive effort. Much more so than the previous two steps. Capturing something, you know, you just so easy to hit save or to, you know, whatever, copy paste. Organizing is also not that hard. You just ask yourself one question. What is this most relevant to? But distilling, sometimes there's some notes I have to sit down for like 20, 30 minutes to really distill what it's about. Therefore, because it's cognitively expensive, you only want to do it if you're sure it's going to be useful.
Oh.
See?
How do we know it's going to be useful?
Yeah. So to contrast it, sometimes I hear people say, oh, I set aside, you know, 30 minutes or an hour every Friday afternoon to go through and distill all my notes. But I'm like, why? Many notes, maybe even most notes, might never be valuable. You might never have a use case for them. You might never revisit them again. Therefore, all the cognitive effort that you put into them was wasted. Okay. So the way that you can kind of de-risk that and make sure that the effort you're putting in to distill is going to be worth it is to wait till the last possible moment when you're actually working on that project. That is the exact correct moment to distill. You know, that moment when you sit down and it's like, it takes a while to kind of load up the details into your brain of even what is going on with the project, right?
I do this instinctively, so I can so relate to this, right? Like my note-taking is garbage compared to this, but I do what you're talking about. I go back through it and I'm like, nope, that's not relevant anymore. That's not relevant anymore. And in my brain, I should have archived it, but this section is relevant. I might need to go back and revisit what was said and distill it.
Totally.
Because I'm about to start something important, right?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, instead of sitting down and being like, oh, what was I doing? Oh, where's the looking up an email? And oh, was that file? Where did I put that? Which is a really painful and stressful way to start anything. Often what I'll do, like here's a very specific example. I'm working with a consultant right now to personalize our email marketing. It's a project, very clear goal, very clear outcome. But it's also not something I inherently enjoy that much. It's very technical. It's like you have to, you know, get this data that you have about them and insert it at this one place. It's like very complicated. So what do? Every time I sit down to work on this project, the very first thing I do is simply distill and summarize the meeting notes of what we did last time, which is the perfect preparation. There is no better way for me to kind of load up those details again.
I love that. I do that before everybody that listens to this podcast. I have a pre-call and I had one with Tiago, and I usually about an hour before, sometimes the day before, I will prep a little bit more than normal to make sure that I have everything I need so that when I meet with Tiago, it's going to go smooth. You know what I mean? Like I've got the basic data in front of me so that if for whatever reason we run out of time, I can still feel confident that we're going to be able to do a great interview. So I think this is a really smart thing. Now, I know there is a last step, the fourth step, which is the E. Tell us about the E.
Yeah, the E, the culmination of everything. This is really the most important step. It's really the reason all the other steps exist, which is the output. E stands for express, right? So if you think about knowledge work, information work, it always ends in some kind of output, or some kind of deliverable, or some kind of content, or even just a decision, or some kind of communication, an email you send, a conversation you have, a presentation you give. This is actually a big mindset shift. Is we think of like content creators as this category over here, you know, of YouTubers and blog writers and podcasters. That makes no sense to me. Every knowledge worker is a content creator. I insist. If you write emails, that email is content. Right? If you are a graphic designer, that is content. It doesn't matter if it's public or not, or if you're putting it on social media or not. That's just a detail. Every single modern professional is a content creator, I insist.
What do we need to know about the Express side of things?
It really depends. What Express looks like depends on your medium. And this is where it's like C, O, and D, capture, organize, and distill, tend to be quite similar for most people, right? For an artist or a photographer, a pilot, an engineer, you know, we're capturing, organizing, and distilling. But then with the E, we all diverge. And how you use that information depends completely on what you're trying to achieve, what channel you're acting within, what medium you work in. And so we can talk about that more. But all I know is that regardless of the creative medium, like truly regardless, sitting down and instead of looking at a blank page or a blank canvas or a blank text document or whatever that version is for you, you are instead turning to your second brain where you have a pre-vetted, incredibly rich collection of ideas you've already decided are interesting and relevant and valuable. That right there, to me, is the difference between a career or a business that is struggling and frustrated and always over capacity and one that is thriving and where your work actually feels easier and easier over time.
So what I'm really hearing you say is that this E in the code concept we're talking about is the, if you follow this model, right, which is to capture, organize, and distill, then when it comes time for you to express yourself in whatever medium you must express yourself in, whether it be an email to a boss, whether it be a written post that you're going to publish on the socials, or a video you're going to create for a personal colleague, it's going to be so much easier for you to express yourself because you've done the preliminary work that leads up to this. Is that correct?
Exactly. Beautifully put.
Man, Tiago, this has been really, really, really cool. I know that there are some people listening who want to learn a lot more about you. First question, because this is the Social Media Marketing Podcast, is there a preferred social platform where they can learn more? And then obviously, where do you want to send them if they want to learn about your company and your business and all the cool things you got going on?
Yeah, absolutely. This was a lot of fun. My social platform of choice is X, formerly known as Twitter. That's where I'm most personally active. But we're also on Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube, the usual suspects.
Is it at Tiago Forte? Is that how we find you there?
It's either at Tiago Forte or at Forte Labs, which is the name of my company.
Cool. And then if people want to find out about your company directly, where do you want to send them?
Yeah, for anything second brain related, I would point them to buildingasecondbrain.com. And there you can find our podcast, our books, courses, all that stuff. For the company more generally, kind of our other offerings, and we do other things, they can go to fortelabs.com.
Tiago, thank you so much for sharing your insights with us and going through and documenting your struggle so that we can now obviously benefit from it in a pretty dramatic way. I know there's a lot of people who are going to really have their eyes open as a result of this conversation. Thank you.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you, Michael, for having me on.
Hey, if you missed anything, we took all the notes for you over at socialmediaexaminer.com/613. If you're new to the show, be sure to follow us. If you've been a longtime listener, would you let your friends know about this show? I'm at Stelzner on Facebook, at Mike_Stelzner on Twitter/X. And we've got a lot of other shows. Check out the Marketing Agency Show and the Social Media Marketing Talk Show. This brings us to the end of yet another episode of the Social Media Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Stelzner. I'll be back with you next week. I hope you make the best out of your day and may your marketing keep evolving.
The Social Media Marketing Podcast is a production of Social Media Examiner.
If you're like so many fellow marketers and creators and entrepreneurs, you're probably wondering, how do I put AI to work? Well, be sure to listen to the AI Explored podcast, a new show from Social Media Examiner, hosted by yours truly, Michael Stelzner. Again, check out the AI Explored podcast.